This edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast is being taped on the 29th of January 2018. It will air, this program is going to air sometime tomorrow evening, on the 30th of January. So no phone calls tonight, but as always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my Instagram account at Rillo Gerald Quinn. This program is being sponsored by webmagazine.com. You can go to www.webmagazine.com. New customers earn a free subscription. So both teams are, we begin the program with Super Bowl 52. Just now, 6 days away. By the time this program airs, it will be 5 days away. As both teams arrived in Minneapolis, media opening night for the media. Of course, you will have Tuesday media day, and again, it will be basically for the next 4 days. Players and coaches being asked basically the same dumb questions over and over again. So that gets nauseating after a while. You'll get the questions about Brady, Belichick, Kraft relationship. You'll get Nick Foles to get the questions about being the underdog quarterback, and Doug Peterson about being the underdog coach, and things of that nature. Or, you know, LeGarrette Blount, you know, facing your old team. So again, the challenge of the Super Bowl is to try to create interest, because you can't preview a game for five straight days. That's impossible. You're not gonna preview a game for 5 straight days. We will have a special Super Bowl 52 show breaking down and previewing the game on Sunday afternoon, a couple hours, roughly around, I would say about 12, 1 o'clock, but probably close to about 1 o'clock on Sunday, breaking down the game. So if you're the Philadelphia Eagles in particular, because New England has been here a million times, you want to stay away from the off-the-field distraction that could cost you a game. You don't want to be Eugene Robinson. You don't want to be Barrett Robbins or Stanley Wilson. All three of those guys got into some mess off the field during Super Bowl week, and it's now no coincidence that all three of those players were on losing teams. The biggest one to me was the Stanley Wilson, because that game was the closest out of the three games. The San Francisco Cincinnati game was the closest, that 20-16 game, in which, of course, Joe Montana had that famous 92-yard drive that ended with the John Taylor touchdown. But Cincinnati could have won that game, and Stanley Wilson was a big part. Along with Icky Woods, who was going to be a big part of their running game, of the Cincinnati Bengals running game, you know. But a night before the game, he was coked up, and you know, that was that for Stanley Wilson, and turned out to be a big devastating blow for the Cincinnati Bengals, who would lose their second Super Bowl to a Joe Montana, Bill Walsh led San Francisco 49er team. So again, if you're the Eagles, you want to stay away from all the nonsense, anything off the field that could be a distraction. Again, the Patriots, you don't ever worry about the Patriots, because they've been here, they've been here so many times. They know what to expect. They know what to say. They know how to conduct themselves. You don't worry about that stuff with the Patriots. But the Philadelphia Eagles being the younger of the two teams, as far as less experience of the two teams in terms of coaches, players, you always certainly going to be concerned about something happening off the field. Now, the good news for the Eagles is Minnesota is not Miami, is not New Orleans, is not Los Angeles, is not New York City. I don't know what there is to do in Minneapolis, in Minnesota this time of year, outside of going to the mall and ice fishing. Or going to a Timberwolves game. I don't know what can you possibly get into that would that would throw you off for the biggest game of your professional life. But I'm sure Minnesota, Minneapolis has some clubs, some nightclubs. So the Philadelphia Eagles certainly will want to stay away from any off the field distractions that could present them issues come Super Bowl, come Sunday evening. Of course, the line has not changed. The New England is 4.5 point favorites. I expect that line to maintain for the majority of the week. Maybe it goes up to 5.5 or goes down to 4. I don't expect it to move a lot. I don't expect it to move a lot. Most people think that this game is going to be close, that this will be a touchdown and under game going to the fourth quarter. So 4.5 is probably I wouldn't be surprised if it stayed at 4.5 going into the game Sunday evening. Again, this is the Cyril Gerald Gordon Sports Podcast. No phone calls tonight. This program is being recorded. We're going to record it on a Monday evening. We'll air on Tuesday night, so no phone calls tonight. But again, always you can catch our program, catch a replay of our program at www.blogtalkradio.com/CyrilQuinn. I will be posting, be posted on Instagram, Facebook as well. Before tonight is over, but after on Tuesday evening. Also this weekend, a story that has, taken outside the Super Bowl might be the biggest story in sports right now. The allegations of Michigan State in regards to not only Larry Nassir, who was sentenced to 175 years in prison, but the football and basketball programs and how they just blatantly ignored assaults and battery situations in regards to women on campus. Listen, let's be honest. Let's call it a spade a spade. Michigan State, this is not that far removed, and this is not that far off from being Penn State like. In regards to, Larry Nassir is Jerry Sandusky. And let's be honest, the presidents, the trustees, the boosters, all those people have culpability as enablers to Larry Nassir. But there are two other guys who have culpability to being enablers. And their names, of course, are Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio. Those guys had athletes, had players on their teams who committed acts of sexual assault and battery repeatedly on women during that tenure as coaches of those programs. And let's be honest, they turned Tom Izzo, and he's been all-time great coach. Let Mark D'Antonio has done a tremendous job at Michigan State, but those guys contributed to what was turned into basically a rape culture at Michigan State. And I don't care what Izzo does or D'Antonio does for the rest of their careers. This will be a black mark for them as long as they coach. There's no getting away. There's no two ways about it. I would encourage you to read the ESPN report, Outside the Lines report, on this. I mean, again, this was a culture that was created within the university. They did not want anybody outside in terms of federal investigators to handle these cases. They wanted to handle these cases within so they can control the outcome, control the narrative. But now that you have some Olympic gold medalists, gymnasts that have come out, the cat is completely out of the bag. And now, this is in connection now with this entire nation as far as the Me Too movement. It's all out now. And right now, Michigan State, again, if federal investigators get involved in this, who knows what will be the fallout. But the bottom line is there's a rape culture at Michigan State. You have two prominent coaches, one of them being a Hall of Fame coach in Tom Izzo, that completely, or soon to be Hall of Fame, I think that soon to be Hall of Fame, Tom, Hall of Fame coach in Tom Izzo. I think he is in the Hall of Fame, but a prominent coach in Tom Izzo who, again, was grilled yesterday or Sunday evening from the ESPN reporter Trisha Thompson, who did a tremendous job at grilling him with the questions. Nobody cared about the outcome of that Michigan State Maryland game. It was just all about what has transpired over the last 20 years in regards to, and during the Tom Izzo era. He had a guy in Travis Walton who had three separate accounts of battery against women and assaults against women, three separate accounts in basically one count a year, and was not suspended or reprimanded whatsoever from being an assistant coach on that particular team, or a grad assistant on that particular team during that particular year. So Izzo and D'Antonio have a lot to answer to. I don't anticipate that either one of them will be fired, especially Izzo, considering his reputation prior to this. But again, this Michigan State program, you will never look at Michigan State the same after this situation, where you allow basically this sick maniac in Larry Nassar to preside for the better part of 20 years to sexually and physically abuse young women, anywhere from the ages of 6 to basically 18 to 20. And, you know, again, the amount of enabling, I mean, it is right on par with what happened at Penn State. Let me be honest with you, it is right on par. The only difference is that there was not a figure as big and as prominent as Joe Paterno. That's the only difference to me, because Izzo is a great coach, but he's not on the level as far as Joe Paterno's level, as a legendary figure in his sport. Not on that level. Great coach, but you know, Joe Paterno was an icon before all the stuff went down at Penn State. So this is something that, you know, will be stuck. That this is something that Michigan State is going to have to live with for the rest of the time, for forever. This is something, there's no running away from this. Again, the amount of enablement that took place is beyond. I mean, you can't tell me that this could go on for 20 years and nobody had a whiff of this type of stuff going on. Again, all of it is connected. Larry Nassar, what went on with him, what went on with the Michigan State basketball players, what went on with the Michigan State football players. This is all one, even though they're different sports, one culture of allowing whether it be athletes, coaches, allowing anybody who's putting money in the university's pocket to basically get away with you know, the worst of the worst out of anything outside, basically the closest thing to murder in regards to some of the stuff, some of the abuse that a lot of these women and a lot of these young girls had to endure due to just the university, you know, being tone deaf and basically just caring about the dollars and cents. And that's what it comes down to. Again, this is not over. This is something that will be ongoing for months and months. And again, I would put it right up there with what transpired in 2011 with Penn State, Joe Paterno, and Jerry Sandusky. 38 minutes after the night on the night after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Today's headlines: Blake Griffin has been traded to the Detroit Pistons. So Blake Griffin will go to Detroit. In return, the Clippers will get Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Bogdan Marinovic. And the Pistons will also get Bryce Johnson and Willie Reed. But forget about those. Forget about Bryce Johnson and Willie Reed. This, to me, is about Blake Griffin. Now, the Clippers, I know exactly what the Clippers are doing. The Clippers know that they are a fringe playoff team at best, even with Blake Griffin on the team. And the Clippers know that. They understand that. They are a fringe playoff team. So I completely get what the Clippers are doing. I don't blame them. I thought the Clippers should have broke up their team. They got rid of Chris Paul and should have moved Blake Griffin then. Maybe they could have got more for him. Maybe not coming off the injury. This year, you know, despite having some injury issues again this year, he's still putting up about 22-9-5, close to 5 assists. He's still an all-star caliber player. He's still a guy that can play at a high level, and he's still a guy that can put fannies in the seats. So you're hoping if you're Detroit that he can somewhat stay healthy. And if he can stay healthy, if he's doing what he's doing in the Western Conference, imagine what he could do along with Andre Drummond in the Eastern Conference. If you're the Clippers, you just got away from a 5-year, $171 million contract, knowing that the guy that you just traded away was not going to be healthy for the better part of that contract, knowing that you were limited even with him on the team in terms of how far you were going to go in the Western Conference. So to me, it is a win-win for both teams. The Pistons will be getting those salaries they're getting back in return. Avery Bradley will be a free agent after this year. Tobias Harris, who is a very good player, averaging about 18 points a game, will be a free agent after 2019. Matter of fact, if you want to, you can move Tobias Harris. You might be able to move Tobias Harris if you want to this time next year during the trade deadline, as he will be on have a very cap friendly deal and a deal where you could trade him for possibly a pick or something like that. So that those two contracts, the Harris and Bradley contracts, are movable contracts if you want to go that route, or you can keep him on the team and make a playoff run. Both of them are very good players. Avery Bradley is one of the better two-way defensive guards in the league who's improved offensively. Tobias Harris, you know, hasn't gotten much play because he plays in Detroit and because the team has been very good. It's a guy that can get you 18 to 20 points a game. Again, I cannot blame the Pistons. Excuse me, I can't blame the Clippers at all for making this move. I understand you want to say, well, they got Rev, the best player in the deal, and he is. Blake Griffin by far is the best player in this deal, but it wasn't about that. That Clipper team with Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, though that era of Clipper basketball is over. I think the Clippers know that era is over. Don't be surprised if they move DeAndre Jordan. There already been some whispers about a possible DeAndre Hassan Whiteside deal. So Detroit Pistons land Blake Griffin. The Clippers get some cap-friendly contracts in Harris and Bradley, and there you go with those with the first blockbuster deal of this trade of the NBA trade deadline. Again, DeAndre Jordan could be moved. There may be some couple other guys that could be moved as well, but DeAndre Jordan is the guy that everybody's talking about as a possibility in terms of the all-star caliber player that could be moved before the deadline is up. Roger Federer gets number 20, just, you know, 36 years old. This guy has just outlasted everybody. He has outlasted all his competitors, all of the young and up-and-coming players, Djokovic, Nadal, Murray, who all have injury problems now. Federer still standing, and now you look at this running that he's had. He's won 3 out of the last 5 majors, 3 out of the last 4 that he's participated in. He didn't play in last year's French Open. It'd be very interesting to see how he navigates his schedule moving forward throughout the course of this year. Will he skip the French Open again and to prepare for Wimbledon? Or will he just be like, I think a lot of it is going to depend on Nadal. If Nadal is not in the French Open, I'll make this prediction. If Nadal, who's had some injury issues of his own, if Nadal doesn't participate in the French Open, I think I could see Federer playing in the French Open. I really can. If Nadal's playing well into going into the French Open, then I could see Federer skipping it. So I think a lot of him playing in the French Open would depend on how Nadal is looking going to the French Open. But of course, that is months from now. He has a good 4 to 5 months to think about that. Right now, again, 20 majors. He joins a select, and I mean a who's who list of tennis players to win 20 majors. I'm talking, of course, Steffi Graf, Serena Williams, and Margaret Court. in Margaret Court. And you think about it, there wasn't, you know, about, you know, 2 years ago, we didn't think Federer would reach 18, let alone 20. Remember, after 2012, he went four full years without winning a major, without winning any majors. Came up short a couple times at Wimbledon, came up short in the final against Djokovic, came up short in the final against Djokovic in the at the US Open back in 2014. So it was questions about whether or not he would ever win another major, Wimbledon, or knew he probably wasn't going to win the French Open, but Djokovic was so dominant at the time. They'd all was, you know, it was Djokovic, Murray. You had some young guns like Cilic coming along and some other guys, but he frankly again has outlasted all of these players. And right now, first of all, I don't see how he's not number one, but that's, you know, that's, we know how crazy tennis rankings can be and how little sense, if any at all, do tennis rankings make, men's or women's. But that doesn't matter. Everybody knows that right now he is at the top of the sport, and with no end in sight, who knows how many majors he will end up with. And, you know, again, I think Djokovic could just be shot. And again, there are no young players even threatening Djokovic, either threatening Federer or even a healthy Nadal for that matter. So we'll see how the rest of this tennis years goes. Again, Roger Federer, number 20 and counting for Mr. Federer as he looks to chase a Grand Slam this year with the way the rest of the field is looking. Oscar nominations came out this weekend. Again, a nice, you have a mix of the young, of the old guard, and some up and coming talent. You know, Denzel, Meryl Streep, Daniel Day-Lewis, William Dafoe, Woody Harrelson. You know, you see some big iconic stars who get nominated, who get those nominations, who get nominated for best actor and actor and supporting actor. And then you have some young up and coming actors, Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out and Margot Robbie for The I, Tonya, which from what I hear was a tremendous movie besides the performance that she gave for playing Tonya Harding. Thing about Meryl Streep, and listen, we know Meryl Streep is a just iconic generational talent as an actress. But this is 21 nominations. She's made 82 movies. Excuse me. She's made 82 movies and been nominated 21 times. Okay. Putting that in perspective, that's basically her being nominated one in every four movies. Denzel's been nominated 9 times and he's made 56 movies. That's about 16% of the movies that he's been nominated in, which is a high percentage. I mean, that's, you get over 5%. Of the movie, that's a high percentage. They're on 16. 25% is just ridiculous, ridiculous amount of times to be nominated. Every Meryl Streep performance is not this all-time great, you know, catch-your-breath virtuoso performance. It's not. I'm sorry. I you don't have to nominate her every single year. But the Academy seems to have this love affair with Streep and continuously will nominate her year in and year out. 21 nominations in 82 films. I mean, that is just a ridiculous, ridiculous amount of times to be nominated. But again, Oscars, of course, on March 4th. Again, a nice mix of the old guard versus some new and up-and-coming talent or some lesser-known names. You have a couple of older actors, Christopher Plummer and Richard Jenkins, who got some nominations, who have really flourished late in their careers, especially Christopher Plummer. All the Money in the World, he's nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I heard that was a very good movie. And again, Frances McDormand, she gets a nominated for Best Actress. Again, she won about 22 years ago for Fargo. We know what type of talent she is. So looking forward to it. March 4th, nominations are out for the Oscars. I was kind of surprised, a little bit surprised that Denzel got nominated. I didn't walk away from it. And I saw Roman great, Roman Israel. Didn't walk, and again, he was tremendous here, but I didn't walk away saying that, hey, that's going to be a nominated performance like I did with Flight or even Fences last year. So concept-wise, he got nominated, but again, it's Denzel Washington, his ninth nomination in his illustrious career. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. I will see you next time. Enjoy your evening.